C+30. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Although there had never been anything on any level close to this, after previous unexpected events, Dan and Clark had grown only too accustomed to asking Emma what to do next. They had grown only too accustomed to asking her who might be behind some scheming action or another, only too accustomed to asking for her expert take on the behind-the-scenes angles, and only too accustomed to asking what they themselves should do in response. But now that the worst action of all had left Emma not just unable to help them understand an event, but fighting for her own life because of it, they had no one to turn to but each other. The trend ticker on the wall kept cycling through two posts, both pointing the blame at John Cole. If Emma had been at his side rather than in hospital, Dan felt sure that she would have dismissed this out of hand. Both Cole and Jack Neal had proven themselves irresponsible and irrational with their comet-leaking fiasco, but a multiple assassination attempt in front of the world's cameras was a step too far. The maniacal group of terroristic eco-nihilists who called themselves welcomers were a far more likely bet in Dan's eyes, and had indeed already claimed responsibility. But the relative lack of drama inherent in that story saw it relegated to occasional mentions by the orgiastically sensationalist news networks. Timo's suitcases lay on the floor beside the bed, which he'd made perfectly every morning of his stay, and most recently just hours earlier. A small yellow scrunchie from Emma's hair was lying in the opposite corner of the room, repeatedly catching Dan's eye. Rooster sat upstairs, no doubt wondering why he was suddenly back in this house and not in the empty one next door, where it didn't look like anyone would be home to take care of him anytime soon. It was impossible for Dan not to think of all the time the group had spent in the basement in recent weeks, first trying to make sense of the messenger signals and then finding and interpreting the cursed and godforsaken fourth plaque. He looked across the basement at the wall-length research board he had been working on for the better part of a year. Initially, his work had been relaxed and almost enjoyable as he tracked other groups' searches for the plaque they had erroneously believed was already on Earth. But ever since the Kerguelen bolide of 3 weeks earlier, his work had been more urgent, more consequential, more stressful. The weight of the hoax felt a long way away, a distant feather compared to the weight of Emma's condition and Il Diavolo's relentless approach. Clark saw Dan walking towards the board with his shoulders slouched and couldn't help but think back to the night when Ben Gold's revelation of the hoax had left Dan literally curled up in a ball on his bed. That night had been the worst either of them had known up to that point. But however bad their situation had been back then, Timo hadn't been maimed, and Emma had been by their side, rather than unconscious in a hospital bed. And of course, back then, while Ben Gold's midnight revelation might have turned Dan's whole world upside down, that revelation hadn't come close to the shattering news that a giant comet was unstoppably hurtling towards it. When Dan reached his research board, still completely covered with printed maps and photographs, neatly handwritten ideas, and a veritable bounty of more recent plaque-locating triangles and scribbled theories, he pulled his shoulders back, took a deep breath, and snapped. He ripped down paper, clawed at the board, and even ripped some of its fixings from the wall. Clark stood back, letting him get it all out. "What's the point in any of this shit?" Dan yelled, turning his attention to the security center on the back wall and throwing his chair at the many screens. When only one of the screens cracked, he picked the chair up and threw it again. The look on his face reflected nothing but a full-on rage directed at anything and everything related to the messengers he saw as having let them all down so badly. Clark stepped in only when Dan moved towards his computer. This was the line, Clark decided, since it contained data that couldn't easily be replaced. Dan didn't struggle or hit Clark when he was restrained, at least not beyond an initial attempt at flailing his way free. "That's enough, man," Clark said. He then felt Dan's body go limp as all of the anger and fight went out of him, leaving only deflated defeat. Clark let him go and he immediately collapsed onto the bed. Dan didn't curl into a ball or vomit like he had in reaction to learning of the hoax. Could have been worse, Clark dryly thought to himself, but his deflation this time seemed even more total and definitive. "Are you coming to see Timo?" Clark asked. Dan, face down, shook his head without looking up. Well, I am, okay? Don't break that computer. And do I need to risk taking the plaque and the footage with me, or can I trust you not to do anything stupid to them, too? Dan turned his head to the side. I'm not going to do anything, he said before quickly reburying his face in the mattress, a move which muffled his next words. What's the point? Keen to both check on Timo and also loop Trey in on the minor update Emma's doctor had given on her condition, Clark set off up the stairs. He stopped halfway to look around the trashed basement, then back down at Dan. He had also felt like trashing everything and now felt like collapsing on the bed too, but he didn't think his ability to keep going made him any better or any stronger than Dan. They were just built differently, in the same way that Emma and Tara were, and the same way that any other siblings could be. I'll be back soon, he said. Dan replied with the least enthusiastic thumbs up ever, a gesture designed less to reflect any positivity than to acknowledge Clark's words without having to expend any more than the minimal possible amount of energy. Clark sighed and walked out.